Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
You know, when we think about World War II, often it's the big battles that jump out, isn't it? D-Day, Pearl Harbor, Stalingrad, and that sort of thing.
Right. The major milestones, the headline events.
Exactly. But today, we're aiming for something a bit deeper. We want to really peel back those layers, understand the conflict, not just as a sequence of battles, but as this total transformation, global and crucially ideological.
Yeah, and we're diving into the work of Gerhard L. Weinberg, looking especially at his huge book, A World at Arms, but also synthesizing his key ideas generally.
He's really considered definitive, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. For anyone trying to get a deep, interconnected understanding of the 20th century, Weinberg is just essential. He really forces you to rethink the war's core nature.
So our mission today is pretty clear, then. We want to unpack his main argument.
That this war was totally different, genuinely global, and fundamentally driven by ideology, not just, you know, bad diplomacy or some kind of historical accident.
Exactly. And understanding that is so vital because, well, WWII didn't just end. It actively created the world we're still living in.
You mean the whole post-war order?
Yeah. The superpowers, the Cold War framework that shaped decades, even the tech we rely on now. Getting the origins right helps make sense of everything that followed.
Okay, let's get into it. Who exactly is Gerhard L. Weinberg?
Yeah.
And why is his perspective considered so authoritative? He wasn't just looking at things from the outside, was he?
No, not at all. His authority comes from this really potent mix of deep scholarship and, frankly, lived experience. He was born in Germany in 1928, Jewish.
Aww.
Yeah, so he and his family had to flee Nazi persecution, first to the UK, then the US. He saw the immediate consequences of the regime he'd later dedicate his life to studying.
Wow. That personal history must add a certain weight.
Mm.
But professionally, what gave him that edge?
Well, professionally, his big contribution was his commitment to primary sources, especially the German ones. After the war, he played a key role in processing and analyzing vast amounts of captured German documents.
So, like, the internal memos, meeting minutes,
yeah.
The actual plans.
Exactly. The aggressor's own words. And because he was multilingual, he had this incredible access to evidence that often contradicted the stories German generals told after the war.
So he could see past the post-war spin, basically.
Yeah.
Read their actual intentions from the time.
Precisely. It let him see the strategic thinking, or sometimes the lack of it, from the inside.
Can you give an example of what that inside view revealed?
Well, one key thing was understanding Hitler's strategic priorities. Some earlier accounts painted Hitler as maybe reacting to events, a brilliant but erratic tactician.
Mm-hmm.
Weinberg, looking at the internal documents, showed something different. He showed that Hitler's main goals, especially invading the Soviet Union, were pretty fixed, decided years before.
So not reactive, but programmatic.
Very much so. He also revealed, you know, a lot of internal chaos within the Nazi regime. They weren't always efficient, despite the outward military success. But, and this is key, they remained absolutely focused on their destructive revolutionary aims.
That focus on the aggressor's own planning documents really underpins his whole argument, doesn't it?
It does.
So if he's digging into those original plans, what's the absolute core of Weinberg's argument about the war's origins? What makes it revolutionary?
Okay, the central thesis is this. World War II wasn't just another European conflict, it wasn't just a continuation of WWI, and it wasn't a diplomatic failure. It was the deliberate, premeditated, and in Weinberg's view, inevitable result of Adolf Hitler's long-held ideological program.
Inevitable. That's strong.
It is. He argues that while things like the Treaty of Versailles or the weakness of the League of Nations created the opportunity, the war itself was the execution of a monstrous plan laid out well before 1939.
So he's really pushing back hard against that idea of it being just, you know, WWI Part 2 or a big diplomatic mess up.
Completely. Weinberg demonstrates that the war flowed directly from Hitler's twin obsessions. These weren't negotiable points for Hitler. They were fundamental beliefs that guaranteed a war of annihilation.
Okay, what were those twin obsessions?
First, Lebensraum, living space. This meant conquering vast territories in Eastern Europe, especially from the Soviet Union.
For resources, settlement.
Both. A huge resource base and land for German colonization meant to fuel this thousand-year Reich. Second, and inseparable from the first, was implementing a brutal racial hierarchy.
Which means the Holocaust.
Exactly. The systematic extermination of Jews and other groups deemed inferior wasn't a side project or a wartime atrocity that got out of hand. For Weinberg, it was an integral, prioritized objective of the entire Nazi project and the war itself.
That's crucial for understanding it. The war and the genocide were fundamentally linked in their ideology.
Absolutely. They were two sides of the same coin from the Nazi perspective. And Weinberg's work pulls together all the threads, military, political, economic, social, across the globe, forcing us away from a purely Eurocentric view. The Nazi intent, he argues, was revolutionary and total. That's what made this war different.
All right, let's trace the path of the war through Weinberg's lens, starting before the actual fighting. Appeasement. Weinberg says it was a failure of understanding, right?
A fundamental failure of imagination, really. Leaders in Britain and France, well, they treated Hitler like a traditional politician, someone with maybe limited goals, fix a border here, reclaim some territory there.
They assumed he was playing by the old rules.
Exactly. They projected their own kind of rational, pragmatic thinking onto him. But Weinberg argues Hitler wasn't looking for revisions. He wanted to tear down the whole existing international order and replace it with one based on racial dominance. You simply can't appease that kind of revolutionary ambition.
So the war starts in 1939. And those early years, 39 to 41, devastating German victories. France falls quickly. But Weinberg sees this Western campaign differently, doesn't he? Not as the main event.
Correct. For Hitler, defeating France and dominating Western Europe was important, sure, but it was mainly about securing his flank, clearing the decks, providing resources for the real war.
Which was always.
Operation Barbarossa, the invasion of the Soviet Union in June 1941. That, for Weinberg, was the absolute ideological centerpiece. The quest for Lebensraum. Destroying the Soviet state, enslaving his population, that was the core purpose.
Okay, then comes the moment the conflict truly explodes globally. December 1941, Japan attacks the U.S. at Pearl Harbor. And then, almost immediately, Germany declares war on the United States. This merges the European War and the Asian War into one single massive global struggle.
And that merger is absolutely critical. Think about it. Germany declaring war on the U.S. militarily, it was maybe not the most rational move at that moment.
Right. It brought America's full power into the European theater against them.
Exactly. It confirms Weinberg's point. The decision was driven by ideology, Hitler's worldview, his alliance commitments to Japan, not cold, hard military logic. And suddenly, the world's biggest industrial power, the U.S., is fully committed alongside the world's largest land army, the Soviet Union.
And Weinberg makes the point that once that combined industrial might was unleashed, even though the Axis looked dominant on the map in 1942, the clock was basically ticking for them, wasn't it?
Absolutely. The tide really starts to turn in late 1942. You get the formation of the Grand Alliance, U.S., Britain, USSR. They make that crucial Germany-first strategic decision, recognizing Hitler as a primary threat.
And the key battles start shifting things.
Definitely. Midway in the Pacific halts Japanese expansion. El Alamein in North Africa stops the Axis push towards the Suez. And then the colossal turning point. Stalingrad.
Let's linger on Stalingrad for a second, because Weinberg uses it to illustrate that point about ideology overriding military sense, right?
Mm-hmm. He does, very powerfully. The German Sixth Army gets encircled, trapped. Any pragmatic military leader would try to break them out, cut their losses, allow a strategic retreat.
But Hitler refused.
Utterly refused. For him, abandoning the push for the Volga, the Caucasus oil fields, it was ideologically unacceptable. It went against the core Lebensraum mission.
Yeah.
So the Sixth Army was essentially sacrificed.
And its destruction.
Its destruction showed that Nazi programmatic goals trumped military reality. It basically handed the strategic initiative on the Eastern Front to the Soviets for good.
Okay, now let's talk about what Weinberg argues is maybe the most decisive factor, something perhaps less dramatic than battles, but ultimately more important. Economics.
Yes, this is huge in his analysis. All those stunning early Axis victories, they were built on shaky economic foundations, fundamentally weak.
Oh, so?
They lacked reliable access to essential raw materials, especially oil. Their industrial base wasn't as deep or adaptable. They couldn't sustain a long global war effort against the combined resources of the Allies.
So the ultimate victory was down to production lines. Logistics.
Pretty much. It was the combined, overwhelming industrial and logistical capacity of the United States, the famous arsenal of democracy, plus the sheer scale of Soviet mobilization, both human and material. That's what ground the Axis down.
Can you give us a sense of that scale? Maybe an analogy?
Well, think about aircraft. By 1944, American factories alone were churning out more planes every month than Germany could produce in an entire year.
Wow.
The difference wasn't just marginal, it was orders of magnitude. Allied shipping, trucks, tanks, supplies. The sheer weight of material just crushed the Axis war machine. It made the final phase D-Day in the West, the massive Soviet Operation Bagration in the East, the drive to Berlin almost a mathematical certainty, however brutal the fighting remained.
And the war ends. What are the immediate consequences Weinberg highlights?
Well, obviously, the utter defeat of the Axis powers, but also the full horrifying scale of the Holocaust is exposed to the world. Old European colonial empires start to crumble. And critically, you see the emergence of the two new superpowers, the US and the USSR.
Ideologically opposed from the start.
Absolutely. And the seeds of the Cold War, they were sown right there in the final wartime conferences like Yalta and Potsdam as the Allies started figuring out how to divide up the post-war world.
Okay, let's try to boil this down. Thinking about Weinberg's whole analysis, what are maybe four core themes or messages that we should take away? Let's start with that ideological nature again.
Right. The most chilling takeaway is how ideology consistently trumped military pragmatism for the Nazis. Weinberg gives the specific example. Think about the critical final years on the Eastern Front. Germany needed every train, every soldier, every resource.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they deliberately diverted thousands of trains, guards, vital resources, not to the front line, but to transport people to extermination camps. To carry out the Holocaust.
Prioritizing mass murder over military necessity.
Exactly. That tells you everything about the war's driving force. It wasn't secondary, it was central to their purpose.
Okay, theme two. The Axis versus the Allies in terms of strategy and cooperation.
Yeah, the contrast is stark. The Axis, Germany, Italy, Japan were strategically incoherent. They basically fought separate wars driven by their own self-interest.
That's coordination.
Minimal. Very little real operational coordination, not much sharing of technology or intelligence. Their alliance was, well, dysfunctional.
And the Grand Alliance.
Yeah.
They had their issues, obviously.
Oh, huge issues. Deep distrust, especially between the Western Allies and Stalin's Soviet Union. But they succeeded. Why? Not because they shared values, they absolutely didn't.
But because they shared?
Enemies. They shared an existential threat from Nazi Germany. And they managed, despite the friction, to agree on the big picture Germany first and coordinate their military and economic efforts effectively enough to win. Pragmatism beat internal division.
Right. Third theme, total war and its impact on civilian life.
Yeah, Weinberg stresses that this wasn't just armies fighting. It required the total mobilization of entire societies. Everything was geared towards the war effort.
And that changed things back home permanently.
Absolutely. It broke down old social barriers. Women flooded into factories and jobs they'd never done before. Huge population shifts for war work. Science became central to the war effort. Society itself was fundamentally reshaped. Changing gender roles, social expectations, everything, really.
Okay, let's try and make some of these big ideas really stick. Weinberg's work is full of powerful insights. Can you share maybe three core statements or concepts from him that really capture his perspective?
Sure. The first one goes right back to the Holocaust's place in the war. The mass murder of the Jews was not a sideshow to the German war effort. It was one of its central purposes.
Stark. Leaves no room for doubt about Nazi priorities. That's another one, maybe about the alliances.
He put it very plainly. The Grand Alliance succeeded not because of shared values, but because of shared enemies.
Mm-hmm. That really highlights the tough, pragmatic reality of coalition warfare, doesn't it? A lesson that still feels relevant.
It does. And a third one, reflecting on how the war itself changed the world technologically. The atomic bomb did not end World War II so much as World War II created the atomic age.
Ah, so the war's demands, the resources, the urgency, the political will actually drove the scientific breakthroughs that led to the bomb and changed global power forever.
Precisely. The war was the crucible for that transformation.
So we've explored the history, Weinberg's arguments, the key themes. Now let's bring it home. What does this deep dive tell us today? How can we apply these insights from nearly 80 years ago?
Well, I think there are at least three big lessons that resonate strongly today. First, it's about taking intentions seriously.
You mean like the failure of appeasement?
Exactly. The Allies failed because they couldn't or wouldn't believe Hitler actually meant what he said in Mein Kampf and his speeches. They projected their own rationality onto him. Weinberg's work is a powerful warning. When an adversary, whether it's a nation or an extremist group, proclaims revolutionary, unlimited goals,
yeah.
You have to take that seriously. Don't assume they're just posturing.
That's a sobering thought for dealing with modern threats. What's the second takeaway?
It's about the real bedrock of national power. Mm. We often focus on military tech, you know, the flashy stuff. But Weinberg constantly brings it back to economics. Industrial capacity, reliable supply chains, skilled labor, resources.
Mm-hmm.
That underlying economic strength and adaptability were ultimately decisive in WWII. And you see echoes of that today in discussions about supply chain security, manufacturing independence, economic resilience. It's the foundation.
Okay, and a third lesson.
I'd say it's about crisis leadership. Look at figures like Churchill and Roosevelt. Their leadership wasn't just about military strategy. It was about balancing immediate needs, like sending vital aid to the Soviets, even though they distrusted Stalin with long-term goals.
And keeping people on board.
Crucially, maintaining public confidence, keeping democratic societies engaged and resilient through years of terrible hardship and sacrifice, that's a huge leadership challenge then and now.
Thinking back over our discussion, what surprised you most, or what part of Weinberg's analysis really stands out for you? For me, I think it's that sheer scale of the economic disparity.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that American production, once it got going, essentially made the Allied victory a matter of time and logistics. It reframes the narrative away from just battlefield genius or luck.
Yeah, the economic dimension is huge. For me, a final thought to leave listeners with connects to that resilience. Mm. Weinberg really demonstrates something quite profound about different political systems in conflict. He shows that democracies, for all their messiness, the arguments, the disagreements, the slow decision-making, sometimes often prove more adaptable and ultimately more resilient in these long, drawn-out, total conflicts than authoritarian regimes.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, maybe it's their ability to mobilize populations more voluntarily, to harness innovation from across society, to build and sustain those complex alliances based on pragmatic shared interests rather than rigid ideology. That underlying flexibility and resilience of open societies, that's perhaps the most enduring lesson from Weinberg's deep dive into the Second World War.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.